Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight, it is a pleasure to welcome back to our beautiful studios here in downtown Exeter, Rhode Island, the one and only Kenneth Hamilton. Welcome back, Kenneth.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be back again.
Nice to have you with us. Those of you that might remember, it was about a year or so ago when Kenneth was here. He was touring the country as a pianist or a piano player. It's great to have him back again. He has a brand new CD, which has just been released in the United States a few weeks ago, and so we're happy to share that with you tonight and talk to Kenneth. And first off, let's bring a few of the people that maybe didn't listen to the show a year ago a little bit about your background. You're from Scotland.
Yes, the accent you hear is actually from Glasgow. It's what a sober Glaswegian actually sounds like. Basically, I've been a concert pianist for more years than I care to remember now, Mike. This is my second visit this year to Rhode Island, because I was at the URI Piano Extravaganza as guest artist just a few months ago. So it's always a pleasure to be back in the area.
And you're here for a few weeks, or?
Just a couple of weeks, actually, for a holiday, because my wife and I love the area. We think it's beautiful. We like the people. And it's somewhere where you can get a lobster roll without having to mortgage your house, unlike in the UK.
Okay, a lobster roll. I should have known that. I would have had them prepared for you. We'll send one of the guys out and get a lobster roll in here. So you've been playing the piano for a long time. And how did this all start? When were you always interested in music? Did it something that your family had?
Well, it's interesting. My father had a big band, and his father had a big band. So actually, I come from, if you like, on my father's side, a line of jazz or Glenn Miller style musicians. Okay. But I started playing the piano just by accident, because my grandmother, who lived opposite us, happened to get a piano. So I started playing it, and then I suppose I realized I liked it, and then people began to like listening to me, and it just sort of went from there. I've always just found it extremely satisfying, a lot of fun, and it's much better than working, I can tell you that.
Well, there you go. Now, what age were you when you first started playing around before
it
got serious?
Quite late on, relatively speaking, about 10 and a half or something.
Oh, really?
Like that. As late as that. I now realize with research that it's just as well I started before 12, because that apparently is like learning a language. If you start before then, you become, if you like, a native speaker, mm-hmm. whereas after that you become a learned speaker. But I didn't realize that at the time, so I just got in there in time.
Because my granddaughter is 3, and she loves to come over to our house and play with the keys. And what's interesting to me is that she doesn't bang them. She plays them with one or two fingers.
Really?
And that kind of thing. So I'm interested in how young they should start.
Well, I think ideally before 12 or before 11 or 12. But if your granddaughter's really interested, you should get her lessons. Not gently. I mean, I'm sure you're not a tiger grandfather or anything like that.
No, but it's fun to watch her.
Tickle
the ivories, yeah. All right, so you started out at about that age, and did you play in school as you were growing up in a band, or just always by yourself?
I always did classical, actually, and always solo, although I did play cocktail bar piano as a student to make some money, so I can play my way in any key you like.
There you go.
And any level of drunkenness you like.
In America we call that a lounge lizard.
A lounge lizard. Well, in that case, Mike, that's what I was. You know, I have to admit. But mostly it was classical, apart from the lounge lizard days, as you put it. And I just always enjoyed it. And then by the time I was 16, I was playing piano concerti. And one of the nice things in Glasgow, where I grew up, was that you could then go at school to the conservatory, to the then Royal Scottish Academy of Music. So I went there at the same time as I went to school.
Uh-huh.
And did a sort of double thing.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's talk about the new CD that you brought with you. And tell us, I mentioned that it's only been out a few weeks. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, this really is, it's all Bach music, but it's Bach music for the piano. And of course, the piano, well, I was about to say wasn't invented in Bach's day, but it was just, except he didn't write for the piano. But this is all romantic versions of Bach's music by Rachmaninoff, by Liszt, by Busoni. And it sort of brings Bach into a later age, to about 120 years, 150 years after his own time. And of course, we piano players love this sort of stuff because it means we get to play all this wonderful Bach music, but in a way that actually suits the piano. Now, whether Bach would have liked it or not, I don't know. It's just that means we don't have to play the harpsichord. And you know, a lot of people love Bach but hate the harpsichord.
Right.
You remember Sir Thomas Beecham used to describe the sound of a harpsichord as like two skeletons copulating on a tin roof, you know. And I've got to admit, I sort of agree with him. But I love Bach on the piano.
All right. Well, let's start off with track number two and tell us about that piece.
Yeah, this is part of a Bach violin partita that Rachmaninoff arranged for the piano. And it actually sounds half like Bach, half like Rachmaninoff, and slightly jazzy in a way. And, you know, we talked, as you know, before this show started, Mike, and we thought we'd intersperse, you know, our chat with movements of this partita. And this, I love, it's full of life, it's full of vigor, and it's sort of Bach, but slightly wrong, if you like. And it starts off, you think this is Bach, and then you wonder, well, what on earth is this?
All right, well, let's give it a listen. Thank you. Well, Kenneth, now that we're in the mood, let's go to another piece of music. You have a fairly long piece I'd like to get in. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, this is a piece by Liszt, a fantasy and fugue, not on a tune by Bach, but on the name Bach. In other words, the name B-A-C-H, which in German musical spelling is actually letters. You know, B is B flat and H is B natural. So you end up with this sort of little chromatic tune, ba, 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 ba. Like that. You can hear from that why I don't sing, you know, I just play the piano. But basically Liszt writes this 11 or 12 minute piece just on that single figure. And it was designed as a tribute to Bach and also as a way of bringing him, you know, a Hungarian composer, into the great German tradition, because right at the beginning of the piece, you'll hear the Bach figure, da-da-dee-dum, in the bass, and then a Hungarian scale over it. So it's like German and Hungarian mixed. And I've always found this an absolutely thrilling piece.
All right, we will listen to Kenneth Hamilton playing this, then we'll take a short break and be back with more. Thank you. Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Kenneth Hamilton and listening to his music from his latest CD. And Kenneth, I noticed that in the liner notes in the CD, you are played on a Steinway. Do you always play on a Steinway?
I'm almost always playing a Steinway. I'm a Steinway artist. And, you know, as you probably know, Mike, 90% of the major concert halls in the world, I've got Steinway concert grands. I sometimes play in historical instruments, you know, Erards from the 19th century or Pleyel. But, you know, for most purposes, in general, the Steinway is the most flexible and reliable modern instrument.
Does that make your wife happy? Because the Steinway is obviously from Germany, right? Originally?
Yeah, and of course my wife is German. Yeah,
see how
and,
we tied yeah, that together?
That's fantastic. The art of transition here is impeccable. And the other thing is, I mean, it's really interesting. There's two different types of Steinways. As you know, there's the American Steinway made in New York, and there's the Hamburg Steinway made in Germany. And they're actually different. There's significant differences between the American and the European Steinway. Hmm. And as you would expect, most American pianists prefer the American Steinway, and most European pianists prefer the Hamburg Steinway. But you know, you can work with both. I mean, that recording there that we're listening to a bit of was recorded on a Hamburg Steinway, and so if you can immediately feel the difference because the action is different.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So basically, we should be saying Steinways plural, but they're both fantastic pianos.
I know that at my house I have a Steinway that's about 100 years old, and then I have a Mason Hamlin that's about a little over 100 years old, and it's interesting because someone will come in and play one and say, oh, this is the best, and then they'll play the other one, and that next person will say, oh, no, this one's the best. So I'm sure pianists have their individual likes and preferences.
Yeah, they do. And in fact, now that I'm all grown up, you know, I realize that when I was a teenager, you know, and people began to realize that I was fairly good at playing the piano, and I just turned to my parents and said, oh, this piano we have won't do, I need a Steinway. And of course my father probably went white, I didn't even think about it, and went out and bought, admittedly, a second-hand Steinway. It's still a Steinway grand. And so now I just think to myself, you know, I would never do that now, but at the time I just regret, with the arrogance of my teenage years, I just thought, well, I need a Steinway, so he should get me a Steinway.
Well, let's listen to some more of this Steinway with this next track.
Yeah, this is actually a short but beautiful piece, a transcription by the great Italian pianist-composer Ferruccio Busoni of a chorale prelude by Bach, a very sort of, you know, languorous, elegiac, beautiful piece. And Busoni made a whole host of really fantastic Bach transcriptions, and you'll see them on the cover of the music. It would say Bach Busoni, and the title Bach Busoni became so famous that a lot of people thought that Busoni's name actually was Bach Busoni. That was his surname. And once his wife was introduced at a party in Berlin as Frau Bach Busoni.
All right, let's give it a listen.
Thank you.
Beautiful music, Kenneth. Just a note, if people would like to purchase this CD, they can do so, right, at Amazon and other places?
Yes, Amazon, Spotify, iTunes, all sorts of, and downloadable in ways that I can't do myself, but the record company tells me it's available everywhere.
And they should look for your name or the name of the CD?
Well, either, actually. If you search Kenneth Hamilton or Back to Bach, it's the name of the CD. Or if you search, actually, Cardiff University School of Music, because I'm the head of Cardiff University School of Music back in the UK, you'll get to my sort of web page there.
Excellent. All right. Let's get to another piece. We'll try to get as much music out of you as possible.
Yeah, well, get as much Bach as possible. It's always good value for money.
There you go. What's next for us?
Well, as we said, we thought we'd maybe intersperse movements of the Rachmaninoff Partita on Bach. And so the second movement of the Partita, which I think it'd be nice to hear next, is a gavotte. And it's a really, really quirky arrangement. It's more of a derangement than an arrangement. I don't even know whether Bach would have recognized it. But basically, Rachmaninoff had a pal, Leopold Godowsky, a very famous pianist and arranger, and he was an expert in adding extra modern harmonies to things and little inner parts, and I suspect that this particular arrangement by Rachmaninoff is a sort of tribute to Godowsky. So it's you know, as the famous Star Trek phrase, it's Bach, but not as we know it.
We'll listen to that, then take a short break, and we'll be right back with more. Thank you. We are back on Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Kenneth Hamilton, listening to his new CD that's just been released, and a lot of great music. So we're very appreciative to Kenneth for coming in, taking time out of his schedule to share this with our audience. And just so you know, Kenneth, our audience, as you mentioned, is worldwide. People listening on the web and listening to you in places like China and Australia. We have a lot of listeners and quite a few fans in Scotland, I must say. I do get letters from there. So you can always say hi to people back home if you want.
Yes, that's actually very true. And in fact, I'm sure that once this is broadcast, my parents are going to be watching it because or listening to it because they are my biggest fans, despite their advancing age.
Right. And well, they're still trying to figure out how to pay for that Steinway.
Well, that's what I was actually, I think they're probably expecting me to pay them back for it. You know, that's the thing.
I would think that would be the least you could do.
Well, that's because you're more altruistic than I am, Mike.
All right. Well, let's keep the music flowing and let's get to this. And we have a very short piece right now coming up. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is the end of the Rachmaninoff Bach Partita. Just a very quick movement, a jig with a fast dance. And unlike the last piece that the audience has just heard, the Gavotte, this is done quite straight. I mean, Rachmaninoff basically just transcribes the movement for piano and adds some extra voices to fill out the harmonies. But all these harmonies are really implied in Bach's single line. It's really sort of rather jolly, fast piece. And when I recorded this, I tried, it's two halves, both repeated. I tried to play the repeat of each half slightly differently. So if the listeners listen closely, say to the left hand, so some of it will be brought out more in the repeat, some of it less. So I was trying to produce a bit of variety.
All right, here we go. While we were off air, you mentioned you're working on a new CD. This one's just released, and you got another one coming up already.
Yes, I try to record a CD every sort of, you know, eight months or so. And so at the end of next month, I'm recording a CD of Chopin, of preludes, polonaises, and sonatas. So I think it'll probably be out by the end of the year. At least I hope it will if I do my job properly.
All right, so we have Chopin coming. All right, that'll be great. And we have one more piece that we're going to listen to, at least a portion of it. It's pretty lengthy, and I'd like you to tell us about it. But before you do tell us about it, I want to thank you so much for coming in tonight, sharing your music with our audience. I know they love it, and I look forward to having you return at sometime soon, your next trip over.
It's always a great pleasure, Mike. So, yes, I'll look forward to coming back to. If you'll have me, I'd be delighted to come. This is a Liszt piece, a set of variations on a theme by Bach. The theme is Weinen Klagen, which is the German for sort of crying, lamentation. And the reason he chose this theme was, in my view, because two of his three children had died very unexpectedly and at a tragically young age at the end of the 1850s and beginning of the 1860s. His son Daniel died in his late teens, and then his daughter Blondine died in childbirth or just after childbirth. And so Liszt turned to this theme and wrote this massive set of variations. I think we'll hear about two-thirds of it. But then because Liszt, like Bach, was very religious and believed in future redemption and salvation, the piece doesn't end in misery. It ends with a chorale that has really got nothing to do with the lamentation theme. But the words of the chorale, when it's sung, is what God does is for the best. So it was an acceptance of fate. Mm-hmm. And it ends in this sort of, if you like, resigned triumph. So there's a passage right at the end where the soul seems to go up to heaven, just as the piece closes. So like Bach, Liszt didn't really believe in ultimate tragedy. He believed in ultimate redemption.
Excellent. We'll listen to that and then see you all next time on Conducting Conversations. Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.